Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we welcome back licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management and joins us to offer his expertise. Always a popular show. Call early. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email your question for Darren to voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. The number once again, 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy and your home improvement questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. When we do that topic, we welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. Always fun to have Darren on the program. If you have a home repair or maintenance question today, give us a call right now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Welcome back, Darren Tracy. How are you feeling, sir?
Thank you, Ray. I'm feeling fine.
Everybody healthy on your end?
Yes, I do know a couple people that have been ill with COVID, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
But nobody in my immediate family.
Okay. When you are on here in the studio, we will sit around while the news is going on and discuss things that you might want to talk about to start the show. Is there anything on your mind today you'd like to start with?
Not really. If no calls come in,
oh, we have calls.
Okay. I thought if the case arises where no calls come in, I thought I could talk briefly about humidity in a building and how an air conditioner functions to decrease the humidity in a building. Just for the listeners to get an idea how that works.
No, go ahead. Let's hear about that.
Okay. Well, it works on the principle of evaporation. You'll have an evaporator in your air conditioner, and that's cool. And then you'll have warm air in your house that's being drawn towards that evaporator. Let's for the time being think of a window unit.
Yeah.
So that warm air travels towards the evaporator, hits the cooling fins, and that warm air condenses, much like warm air condenses when you breathe on a mirror in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that condensation drips down to the bottom of the coils and out through a tube in the air conditioning unit outside. And that's when you walk down the street and you'll see some window units and then water dripping off that air conditioner.
Hmm.
That's from the condensation that's being removed from inside the building. So that's in simple terms how an air conditioner dehumidifies the inside of a building. And it's helpful in the summertime to bring down the humidity. It makes it more comfortable and minimizes the impact of mold and mildew. I like to see around 55% relative humidity inside the building. So that's the short skinny of it.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. If you have a home maintenance, repair, or improvement question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Penny is in Saratoga Lake. Penny.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is complicated. It's a drainage issue. We are west of Route 9P, which is about 20 feet above our property, and there's a golf course above 9P on the east. The hill supporting 9P behind our property is constantly wet and does not drain. I wanted to know what role the drainage ditch on the east side of Ninthly plays in helping drainage, because people have filled that in and they now have lawns and parking on it. So we're missing the drainage ditch on the east side, and I was wondering if that is causing the lack of drainage.
Well, it could be. I'm somewhat familiar with that general area.
We're right up from Brown's Beach.
Say it again, Penny.
We're right up from Brown's Beach. I can walk to Brown's Beach in 3 minutes, so we're way down below 9P.
Okay.
For those not familiar with the Saratoga Lake area, on the east side, it's rather hilly, and the lake itself would be the basin of a bowl. So you do get a lot of natural storm runoff, and Penny's suggesting that the drainage on the uphill side of the road is being plugged, clogged, filled in, and not able to capture
it's level
the storm
with the
runoff.
Road. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not good. You can bring that to the attention of, I think, the state in this case, because that's a state road. If not the state, the local township, and have them take a look at that. That's one of their maintenance tasks over the years, to keep your storm basins clear and protect the runoff. Stormwater is really important issue in the country.
Yes, I have a shed it's sinking into the hill that's constantly wet, and I've called them twice. So, is there anything we can do down here? Okay.
Best course of action is to call them again, because really it's their responsibilities next to the road. Just keep on them. Talk to your local politician if you don't get anywhere.
Thanks, Penny. You know, it may be, Darren, that to some extent those jobs have been on the back burner with the pandemic and the lockdown. So maybe things will speed up again if she calls one more time.
That could be.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is here to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Jim is in Matamoras, Pennsylvania. Jim.
I have a 16-year-old asphalt roof that's the shingles are supposed to be good for 50 years, but it sustained some storm damage. You would re-roof the lower layers like you would a new roof, but what do you do about the layer underneath the existing shingle as far as nailing goes?
Yeah, I'm not following what the problem is. You have existing shingles and you remove some and replace those. Can you point out?
The storm blew some off.
Oh,
and
all right.
I go to re-roof to patch to it the problem. You would do the bottom layers just like you would a new roof.
Yeah.
But what do you do about lifting the existing layer shingle without cracking
right.
it?
Right. Okay. I get you. And for the listeners that are not following this, when you shingle a roof, you start from the bottom and work your way up with conventional shingles, and the upper course overlaps the lower course, and that's how you obtain your protection from the rain. In this situation, the lower course shingles have been torn off by the storm. So what you do is you start at the bottom where they're ripped off, and you work your way up, and at some point you're going to come to the existing shingles that were not torn off. And what you have to do is roll those up as much as you can and sneak a roofing nail underneath there. And there are tools made that can extend underneath the shingle on top of the roofing nail, and then you hit the tool, and then the tool drives down the nail. Mm. So you can do that, and alternatively, you can surface nail through that last course and caulk the nail head with a top quality sealer, a high-performance silicone sealer is probably the best product. So that's how you tackle that problem.
Jim, thank you very much for the call. We have to take a quick break here. Darren Tracy is here. If you have a home repair, maintenance, or improvement question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And again, we'll take a quick break here, and we will be back with more of your calls coming up. It's funny how things go wrong at the same time. Zach had some problem with our bumper music, and my computer just went belly up here. So I don't know who's calling. So I tell you what, our guest today is Darren Tracy. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. While I fix this computer with the phones, you can answer this email question, hopefully. This one's from Andrew. Andrew writes, yesterday, my daughter, 1.5 years old, turned on the faucet in our second floor bathroom, and it overflowed for about 3 minutes and flooded the bathroom. I only laugh, Andrew, because as the father of five, I have seen just about everything, including that. Andrew goes on, some of the water dripped down through the light fixture below into the first floor. Everything is cleaned up, but I wanted to know if there was something I should be worried about as far as long-term damage to the light or the ceiling, and that is from Andrew.
Andrew, probably not is the short answer to your question. That water will evaporate, and you may end up with a ceiling stain, and that may be aesthetically unacceptable to you. You could hit that with a stain killer, such as a bin, and that would cover that stain. In terms of the water being in the electrical fixture, if you cleaned it out as much as you could, there's probably some remaining, but that will evaporate over time, so you'll probably be okay.
Well, well done in vamping there, sir. And now we have the phones back up and running. 800-348-2551 is the number. Wayne in Catskill. Wayne, you're on.
Oh, thank you. My question concerns attic fans for venting. My wife and I have a home in Catskill. It's about 1,200 feet on the main floor. We have about an 800-foot dry basement and about 500 feet in the semi-finished attic. We don't like air conditioning. There's only maybe 2 weeks of the whole summer where we feel uncomfortable. So we thought that an attic fan may do the trick. We've actually had attic fans in other parts of the country, including the South. And I'm wondering about your take on attic fans and what size might be good for us. And who do you get to install one?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, Wayne. Attic fans can be beneficial because they remove some of the heat in the attic space. So if that's a lower temperature, then the rest of your house is going to be a lower temperature. They're relatively inexpensive to operate compared to an air conditioning system. And I like them installed in a gable end, which is the pointed end of the house where the gables are, not the eave end up high. I really don't like to put any more penetrations in a roof than are necessary. Some fans are installed in a roof, but my preference is in the gable end, and it's probably an easier installation as well. And typically, an electrician would install that unit. That's an electrician's trade, but I expect a good handyman could install that for you.
Wayne?
Okay.
Is there any size that you might recommend for the size of a house?
Just off the top of my head, I would say something like a 300 to 500 CFM fan. And just so you get an idea of how large that is, bathroom fans, exhaust fans are generally in the 75 to 100 CFM. So maybe 3, 4, 5 times that amount of air volume.
Okay, Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Darren Tracy. Peter in North Adams. Peter.
Yeah, hi. I'm a realtor up here, and I'm looking at a 40-acre property with a bridge that covers a waterway, and it's part of the property. Now, this bridge was built in the 20s. It's steel girder. There's if you imagine a rectangle, there's a steel girder every 10 feet, and then there's wood laid down on top of that in the opposite direction, and then another layer of wood where your tires would go. What's the deal? Some of the cement I see is falling. The paint is kind of peeling. What kind of a can of worms is this bridge for the buyer?
Well, I'd really have to take a look at it. And I have personally replaced bridges, smaller bridges like that. If you want to contact me after the show, Peter, send me an email with some pictures. I'll take a closer look at that, but I really can't give you anything definitive on that.
What is your email address?
How much of it's Darren at westbranchinc.com, D-A-R-R-E-N at W-E-S-T-B-R-A-N-C-H-I-N-C.com. You can also contact me on Facebook if you look up West Branch Engineering and Consulting and send me a message there.
You know, it's you're very kind to do this, and you offer free advice. People write you all the time. How many emails do you get after a show where people say, hey, listen, I got a question about this and this and this?
I usually get about a dozen.
Wow.
After each show.
It's a lot of free advice, man. You might need a better agent. Yeah. All right, let's go to Tam in Del Mar. Tam.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure thing. Can you hear us?
Okay, yeah.
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. I had my bathroom redone about 6 years ago, and there's an exhaust fan that goes into the attic. I have a newly insulated attic floor, and I was told recently that the guy that put my new bathroom in did not hook up the exhaust fan to an outside vent. So the humidity from the shower goes directly into the attic. And I don't want mold or mildew, and I wonder how important it is for me to have someone maybe come in and put some kind of a pipe or something from the exhaust fan into the outside through a vent.
Pam, I think that's fairly important to take care of, and it's not a big job. I actually will admit that I was guilty of doing that many years ago, earlier in my career. I just didn't think anything about it. I thought if we just dumped that air up into the attic space, it'd be okay. But it's not, because it puts more moisture up in the attic, and you don't want moisture right in the attic. And what you can do is, usually that's a 4-inch flexible coil pipe. You can connect to the end of that, which is probably just open and free to the attic space now, and continue that pipe to the gable end of your home and cut a hole, usually a 4-inch diameter hole in the gable end, and install a louver on the wall that has a little flapper, so that when the exhaust fan is running, the flap's open. And then when the exhaust fan is shut off, the flaps automatically close by gravity. So that's the procedure if you're not located towards the gable end of your house, or you happen to have a hip roof, which is a type of roof that doesn't have a gable end. You can exhaust that in your soffit. So you just continue that pipe out towards your soffit. You turn it down, and you cut a hole in your soffit. For those listeners who don't know what a soffit is, it's the underside of the overhang of your roof. And there are louvers specifically made for a soffit that operate in the same way. They have louver flats, flaps, but typically are attached with a spring that keeps them shut, except when the exhaust fan is running. So, yeah, it's important. It's not a big job. It usually can be done in a couple of hours.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Darren Tracy, Pete in Furabush. Pete, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. A quick question for the master plumber about a downstairs shower that's located with spacing from the drain maybe 6 inches above the concrete slab. So it's really tight. I did pipe in a P-trap under the shower, but it's not draining well at all. So I guess I'm wondering, can I eliminate the P-trap and go directly? I understand the potential issue about sewer smell and things like that. All my gray water is not connected to a sewer. It's in a separate area. So I'm not too worried about that. And or if you can't pipe it directly, is there any kind of a mechanized system that would assist in the drainage?
Yeah, I'm not following your configuration, Pete, but I can tell you should have a P-trap with the shower. You really should, because you are going to get some gases coming back into your shower. P-trap acts as a seal. It's a water seal to prevent the gases from coming back in, even with gray water. And anything to assist in the drainage, not that I'm aware of. I know that with toilets, you can have a power flush toilet that can assist with the drainage, but not that I'm aware of for, you know, a shower drain.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of pitch on there either, so that's part of the issue. And the water in the P-trap seems to just kind of stand there. Eventually, the shower drains, but it's very slow.
Why does it drain slow? Because is it plugged? Vented properly? I mean, improper venting will slow the drain of a plumbing fixture.
I think it's vented okay. I've got an inline vent that goes up out of it. So I don't think it's plugged anywhere. I've snaked it a few times. Just not sure what the issue is. It does go from 2-inch pipe into 1.5-inch copper pipe, old pipe that was there. But I don't think that's
okay,
the issue.
Okay, well, that can cause a restriction. Okay. Also, if you said older pipe, if there's carbon steel pipe, iron pipe, or galvanized pipe, those can corrode from the inside and cause a restriction. That's a common problem. Mm-hmm. Even if there's only one fitting and not a length of pipe, it can corrode and can cause a problem. So that might be the culprit. I'm actually working on a project like that right now where the old galvanized pipe is going to have to be replaced with copper pipe. So,
gotcha.
All right. Well, Pete,
that can get into a project often because access is difficult. So good luck with that, Pete.
All right, Pete, thanks a lot for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest today on Vox Pop. Cecilia in Amherst, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm worried about mold and mildew in my basement. We have living space in the basement. It's a walkout basement. And my husband, it's an ongoing debate. He has heard that we shouldn't use a dehumidifier because it heats up the basement and then the air can hold more water. And I keep the dehumidifier on as much as possible, and it takes a ton of water out of the air. So,
that's a great question. I like to use a little bit of applied science to answer those types of humidification questions. I'm a big proponent of a dehumidifier in a basement, and I like to lower the relative humidity in the basement to 55 or lower, or in any room in your home for that matter, but particularly in the basement, they tend to be more humid. And you would need a humidistat to determine what your humidity level is. You have to know what your humidity level is.
I think the humidifier has one on it.
Yeah, it has a built-in one. Often they do, but I wouldn't trust that. I would go to a local hardware store, big box store, and you can buy a humidistat as a double check. And they're relatively inexpensive, less than $15, I would say. And that really helps with your operation of the dehumidifier. Typically, they have a setting on them so that they don't run full on all the time. You can set them to a particular humidity level. And then regarding the warm air, your husband's correct on that. It does heat up the basement. But it doesn't contain more moisture just because it's warmer. It can contain more moisture. Warm air has the ability to contain more moisture. And that's actually one of the reasons that it helps bring down the humidity in your basement. Aside from condensing water out of your atmosphere, similar to what I described in the beginning of the program, how an air conditioner condenses water out of the atmosphere. The dehumidifier does the same thing. But in a dehumidifier's case, it doesn't eject warm air from the inside of the building. It puts it right back into the building, which, again, helps bring down the humidity because warm air can hold more water vapor than cooler air, but it also makes your basement warmer. So dehumidifiers are good.
All right. Cecilia, thank you very much. Let's take one more before the next break. 800-348-2551, the number. Hannibal in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm planning to remove a wall between the kitchen and the living room. How do I find out if it's a bearing wall or not?
Okay, the easiest way to tell for sure if it's not a bearing wall is to look in the attic. And if the attic, well, is this a one-story or two-story? I guess I should ask first. One-story or two-story house?
It's an apartment.
It's an apartment.
It's an apartment. Is there a roof directly over the room that you're talking about? There's another floor above?
Yes.
There's another floor above.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you have to find out which way the floor joists are running above the apartment. And typically the floor joists run in the shortest dimension of the room below. And if those floor joists are landing on the wall that you would like to remove, then it's a load-bearing wall.
Can I find the stud finder?
Say it again, Hannibal.
You could use a stud finder to find the joist. That's a good idea. And a stud finder is just a little meter that you drag across the sheetrock, and it identifies the density of the material behind. So where there's a floor joist or a stud, the sensor goes off because it's more dense. So that's a good way. But generally, the floor joists run in the short dimension of the room. So you could start that way.
All right. Well, Hannibal, go ahead, Darren. Finish it up.
If the room is 10 feet wide by 20 feet long, the floor joists run in the 10-foot dimension, and then at the end of those 10-foot floor joists, that would be a bearing wall.
All right. What if it's a square?
Then you could go either way, and you'd use your. Stud finder, density finder to identify that. And you can also poke a hole in the wall, a small hole, just to take a look and see which way they're running and patch it back up.
Gotcha. Darren
That's
Tracy
a good
is
question,
our guest.
Though,
that is a good question. And we will take a quick break here, and hopefully we'll get a few more good questions in for Darren Tracy. 800-348-2551 is that number. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, and we're joined today by Darren Tracy for this home maintenance, repair, and improvement edition of the program. The number is 800-348-2551. And a couple of emails here, Darren, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Mark. Mark says, I've been having a hard time trying to get a plumber lately. So here's my question. What can an ordinary person do to stop a hot water leak in the bathtub if you're not a plumber and you have no plumbing skills? Or what can you do to at least slow it down? And that's from Mark.
Call a friend. Call a friend who's a plumber, really. I mean, plumbing is a difficult trade. It can be problematic.
It really
is. It is. I mean, again, access is a problem. The leak is probably in the mixing valve, and typically they're concealed, and you have to cut an access panel. There's no easy way. There's no easy road to victory on that.
Yeah, okay, this one is from Adam in Gilderland. Another plumbing question. I have a basement bathroom, and every time we flush the toilet, it sounds like a foghorn. What's causing this? And that's from Adam in Gilderland.
Well, it's probably the ventilation issue.
Yeah.
Where the drain pipe is creating a vacuum and trying to pull air.
Yeah.
And that's causing the vibrations and the sound.
Should he be worried?
Only if it's not flushing well. Okay. Only if it backs up.
So basically the sound, as long as everything is working all right, the sound won't cause any damage.
Right. I mean, anytime you flush a toilet, you'll hear it. It's the water moving with the air. It creates vibrations and you get the sound.
All right. Back to the phones we go. We go to Fran in Catskill. Fran, you're on.
Fran, Ann, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I would like to know about well water. And do you think it's a good or bad idea to be able to have a plumber divide and have the cold water without a softener and the hot water with a softener?
Regarding splitting, I'm not sure really. The cold water, well, let me just back up. One reason that you would want a water softener in your home is to minimize the effect of minerals on your plumbing fixtures. So if you only treat the hot water, you're still going to affect the cold water side of your fixtures, your tap water and your toilet. So it's not going to protect your fixtures. The other reason to have a water softener is to feel more comfortable in the shower and be able to suds up easier.
But what about the amount of salt that's in with the softeners?
Well, that gets backwash. It's part of the treatment. To a large degree, it does not end up in the water that you use. It doesn't come out salty. Your water does not come out salty. It's just part of the chemical process. It helps remove the hardness of the system.
Uh-huh.
And okay. While we're on that subject, you're talking about a well, so you're probably out in the country and not using municipal water. It's not advisable to have water softened water backwash into your septic system. So that's another consideration.
So you think it's not a great idea to separate them?
I don't think it's a great idea to separate them. I'm not sure what you gain by separating them.
Having the cold water be a natural and the hot water being with the softener.
Yeah, I'm not right, and I'm not sure that it's a detriment to have the cold water treated by the water softener. And what you can do if you're concerned is to, if it is connected to the cold water, draw a sample, let your tap water run for 5 minutes, and then draw a sample and take it to be tested, a relatively inexpensive test. You can test for coliform and other types of tests, depending upon how detailed you want the test to be and how much money you want to spend. And that can help you determine the safety of the water. But
okay, well, Fran,
I wouldn't be too concerned about that.
Fran, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Fred is in Schoharie. Fred, you're on.
Hello. Thank you. I'm looking to do a rehab on a building that was built in the mid-1800s. It has no basement underneath. It's a crawl space. And there are, a couple issues. I guess there's a mold issue, maybe. How is it possible, and how complicated or expensive is it to somehow put a basement underneath an existing building?
It is complicated.
I know anything. Oh, yeah.
Okay. It is complicated. You would have to support the existing structure. House movers do this. We've done this with our business several times where we've had a house mover come in and jack up the house and temporarily support it. And then you pour footings and a foundation wall and leave pockets for the beams that support the house, leave pockets in the wall, and then they set the house back down on the wall, remove their beams that are needled through the foundation wall, then you patch up those openings where the steel beams were. It really makes an older home nice by providing a nice, tight basement that you can work on your utilities, and then you can seal up for air infiltration and mitigate water and keep water vapor out of your home. It really improves in old house, but it could cost you, say, $5,000 to $10,000 for the foundation work, and it could cost you another $10,000 for the jacking. So, you know, it's a $20,000 project. It's not inexpensive. Okay. You can also create a miniature basement out of your crawl space. Treat it like it's a basement for real short people. And you condition the environment down there, and you seal out the air infiltration, the drafts, keep the varmints out, keep the humidity down. Another way.
Go ahead, Fred.
I'm not sure. How much time do I have here, Ray? Do I take a minute?
Another minute or two.
Okay, I'll take a minute. Basically, you want to lay down polyethylene vapor barrier on top of the dirt floor, and then you can pour concrete over top of that. If you don't have the ability or skills or money to pour concrete, you can lay down concrete bricks, pavers, to give you a floor, and that polyethylene vapor barrier really minimizes the moisture in the basement and it helps you out. And also, you want to turn that poly up and do the same thing with your walls. You want to isolate the moisture that comes into the basement and then seal the perimeter around the rim joist with a spray foam. I know that's a lot of information.
And sure is.
That's the short story. Okay, if you're on Facebook, if you go off in my West Branch Engineering and Consulting, you can see some videos about how to improve basements for old houses.
Oh, that's great. So it's West Branch on Facebook?
It's West Branch Engineering and Consulting. If you search that on Facebook, you'll find it.
All right, Fred, thanks so much for the call. Now we go to Ada in Albany.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. I have developed a kind of severe condition of arthritis. I have a small cod house, Cape Cod house. We're trying to build a very a small, lightly going ramp out of the house, out of our entranceway. And we're thinking, and I was told that I should use compressed wood. I would like to have some of the new composites that they have don't have as much care involved. And I just wanted to know, I maybe extend it a little bit too, so I make a little, kind of like a little deck out there to make that ramp really shallow. I just wanted your ideas on that.
Okay.
Okay. The framework for the deck and the ramp would be made out of treated wood. It wouldn't be the composite wood. The structural component of the ramp would be
treated
wood.
There is an entrance already that has, you know, cement, that, I mean, like a little cement thing, and it has tiles on top of it. So basically, I thought we could extend it just a little bit more. And make it sort of like a little deck, but not only about 5 feet wide.
That's feasible, and it's a good idea. You need some room when you come out the door to turn. There are minimum size required according to the building code. And then you, on top of the pressure treated framing that I was describing, you can use a composite material. Trex is one of the manufacturers, and it's relatively maintenance-free, and it looks good. The downfall is that it costs about three times as much as pressure-treated, but it's a nice product. And
what is it called, by the way?
One manufacturer is called Trex, T-R-E-X. I'm not supporting that particular manufacturer, but
there are more than one variety of the same type of thing.
There are. Okay. And when you create that ramp, you should have that designed by somebody that knows what they're doing. It should be at a pitch of 1 in 12 feet. So for every 12 feet horizontally, you do not want to exceed a drop more than 1 foot vertically.
Aha. That makes sense.
Yeah, there are standards out there, and
Okay.
Good luck with that. If you can't find any standards, reach out to me and I'll send you a link.
Interesting. So you really don't want an Evel Knievel ramp. You want it to be sort of a narrow, a shallow grade.
1 in 12 is the code maximum.
I did not know that. Yeah. Let's go to Marianne in New Windsor. Marianne. Oh, boy. After 24 minutes on hold. Oh, I'm sorry, Marianne. If you call again, we'll get you in. Bill in Glenville. Bill.
Yes, hello. I have a quick question about dryer vent. I'm trying to run one in the house. The closest location to the dryer is in the front of the house, but we don't want the steam coming up and visible by the kitchen window. But going out the back end, it's running 20 feet, maybe 25. It's about the end of the manufacture. You have any experience in running those that length of the house?
I know that there is a limit, and if you didn't say 25 feet, I was going to say it's in the 25 or 30 foot range.
Right.
I wouldn't exceed that manufacturer's recommendation, and it's probably in the building code too. But the code may defer to the manufacturer. I just wouldn't exceed that. I would try to find some other way. There may be a booster fan blower that you could install in line. If you had to go further than that, I would try to find.
Aluminum versus galvanized pipe?
I think either of those are acceptable. Okay. Vinyl would not be acceptable. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Go
ahead. Let me just add, what's important is a connection to the dryer. Often a dryer, you'll drop something behind the dryer and you have to pull it out or put it back in, push it back in.
Yeah.
That connection is important. They have special fittings that make that easier now.
Yep.
So I would look into that.
Okay. Clark in Post and Kill. Clark.
Well, good afternoon. Quick question for you. When you were talking about running the bathroom fan through the flex tube out either to the gable end or into a soffit, what prevents the moisture from now it's cooling, of course, as it's traveling through the flex pipe. What's preventing the condensation from becoming liquid moisture again and laying in that 10, 15, 20-foot flex pipe?
Interesting. All right, Darren.
That's a good question, Clark, and that's why you should use insulated pipe. There is insulated mic pipe made to solve that problem. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
Okay. And second question, while I was on hold, you just gave me cause for panic. softened water backflush should not go into the septic tank?
It's advised that it does not go into the septic tank. Right.
Okay. And is it killing bacteria? What's the rationale for that?
Well, it affects the digestion process in the septic system. In the tank.
Okay, well, Ridex?
No, that's not going to solve the problem. It's not going to solve the problem of the water softener, backwash water entering the septic tank. There's anaerobic digestion that takes place in the tank, and then it goes out to the soil, and there's aerobic digestion that takes place in the soil using oxygen. And people smarter than I am have determined that that is not a good thing. The water softener backwash entering is not a good thing, not helpful. What you can do is separate that discharge and call it gray water and put another smaller dry well outside and have it discharge into that, and it will extend the life of your septic system.
All right, Clark, thanks a lot. Now, Darren, we only have 90 seconds left for the next question and answer, and so we go to Linda in Saratoga. Linda, if you can make the question quick, it'll give more time for Darren to answer that question. Hearing nothing. Hello, Linda. Okay, we're coming to the end of the show. Let's go to Howard in Newburgh. Howard, you have 30 seconds.
Just a very quick follow-up to the question about the gentleman who had a foghorn toilet flushing in his basement.
Yeah.
I've installed several bathrooms and basements where the septic line went out above the level of the toilet, and we had to put a trash pump in, and they sound remarkably like a foghorn.
Huh. Darren.
Oh, well, yeah, that could be the case. They're loud. They're a grinder, and they're electric motors. So.
And they do have kind of that kind of sound. That was my only comment.
Okay, so I wasn't thinking of that. Yeah.
Well, so thank you. Thanks for the show. Thanks for all you guys do. And I'm a member and a supporter. Keep doing the great stuff.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for the call. And I don't think we have time for another call here, Darren, but let's see. Do I have an email that we can read very quickly? I do. This one's from Wayne. My parents have a well. Whenever the well pump turns on, there's a loud banging through the pipes. Not sure if it happens when the pipe turns off, but it happens every time in 8 seconds. Do you have any insight on that?
I do. It's called water hammer, and it's air in the pipes. You can secure your pipes, and you can try to bleed the air out of your piping system. That's the short answer.
Darren Tracy, thank you, sir. Hopefully, I'm knocking wood right now. Next time you come, maybe it'll be in person. But thank you very much for being on the line with us. Appreciate it, sir.
You're welcome.
Have a good one. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, announcing their new bath design center at the Ballston Spa location, featuring Merillat cabinets and Cambria quartz countertops. Consultations available, curtislumber.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, now open for takeout Tuesday through Saturday, 7 to 4. We thank all those in the trenches. Please distance responsibly, henyonbakery.com. And Personal Wine Cellar, Glenville, home of Cellar Dweller, an eclectic selection of red and white wines and spirits. Wine tasting every Thursday and Friday. Home delivery services Thursday through Sunday, 518-399-9463. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. Phones answered by Kayleen White. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we get nostalgic. We talk about comics and sports cards. Been a while since we've done that show. We will do it tomorrow at 2. At the moment, stand by for the book show.